glued to their screens on Thursday as their chancellor was scheduled to meet the US president in the Oval Office. It's rare for half a country to hold their breath when their leader goes on a foreign trip. But turned out Friedrich Merz came out unscathed. Why? Was it luck or was it strategy? A combination of both? Well, we'll be giving you the highlights from the meeting between Friedrich Merz, the German chancellor, and US President Donald Trump, an evening where not being kicked out of the Oval Office is being celebrated as a huge success here in this country, and where Friedrich Merz did manage to place a couple of his messages in the few minutes he actually got to speak in front of the press together with Trump. This is your Berlin Briefing. Richard and I are in the studio, and we're hoping to have Michaela on too for as long as possible, because Michaela did go to Washington with the German chancellor. She got a chance to interview him, and we may have to drop her on the way, because then she might have to rush to the airport to fly back with the German delegation. But for now, she's here and we'll seize the opportunity. Michaela, what did Friedrich Merz tell you? He did sound quite happy. Maybe we can listen to what he told you in that interview that you had with him after that press situation in the Oval Office, and then after that lunch where you couldn't hear what the conversation was about, but then you got the chance to ask him.
And this is my takeaway from today. He is really willing to have an agreement on trade. And if we could achieve that within a foreseeable period of time, we would have achieved much more than former governments on both sides of the Atlantic did. So this is a real great opportunity.
Michaela.
Yes, so clearly they hit it off. They didn't speak exactly the same language, but they do understand each other. And that was the minimum aim. I then also asked Friedrich Merz how he will measure whether this conversation actually made a difference. And he himself then said, it depends on whether there is some kind of concrete outcome. And I got the chance to speak to him. That was after their closed door meeting. The Oval Office meeting was moved to the first position of the meeting at short notice. So they weren't speaking about what they'd talked about behind closed doors. And here, Donald Trump seemed open to find agreement. It almost sounded like there's a preference rather than imposing yet more tariffs on the Europeans. Certainly the German car industry is feeling that pinch a lot. The interesting thing will be what Donald Trump actually does, both on trade tariffs, but also on Ukraine. And that's where we all need to then measure the success. But it didn't go off the rails, as it has done so often. And that was the minimum aim also of the German delegation. Everybody was well prepared. Merz went into that meeting pretty much resigned to the fact that he wouldn't be doing that terribly much of the talking. So, but interestingly enough, there was a lot of talk of Elon Musk. There were a lot of domestic issues being discussed. So one political bro is out. I also asked him about that. He said, well, it's a partnership. They can speak to each other. They may not be political bros, but this is at least something they can now build on when it gets to, I was going to say the nitty gritty, but it isn't really, the major issues that really keep European leaders up at night, and that is, of course, Ukraine and trade.
Yeah, Nina, I mean, you can't stress enough how great the potential risk was for Merz going into this. I mean, we've seen Trump and J.D. Vance and the kind of crew there performing these ambushes on various leaders, of course, most notoriously with Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president. But this has happened to others, too. And, you know, I was in the States for a couple of months around the election last autumn, and I was talking to a lot of particularly, you know, people plugged into the Republican side. And, you know, one of them just said to me, you know, Donald Trump effing hates Germany. And he didn't say effing, but I will say effing on our family podcast. And Germany kind of symbolized to Donald Trump many of the things that he really kind of sees in a coruscating way about Europe, about it being a free-riding country that has underinvested in its defense, but expects America to pick up the bill for its defense, even though it has a cozy relationship with Russia over gas and things like this. Germany just seen as the absolute kind of exemplar of European smug sort of moral superiority. And, you know, we've had so many cases in the last few weeks that have made it look dicey. You know, J.D. Vance's speech at the Munich Security Conference, where he seemed to be almost kind of announcing some kind of culture war between the new administration and Europe, taking aim at Germany's attitude to the far-right AfD party, alleging that there are lower standards of free speech within Europe. Just very recently, Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, calling Germany a tyranny for its approach to the AfD party again. So there was real potential for some kind of explosion, you know, in the Oval Office, given all of that. And yet it didn't happen. And as Michaela said there, I mean, of course, the minimum bar for the German delegation was to avoid something like that happening. That was the kind of worst case scenario. I think they ended up probably with pretty much best case scenario in that that did not happen. And I'm just curious, and let's talk during this pod about why that was. Was it a mixture of kind of clever, like smart schmoozing, kind of bonding over, you know, an anti-Angela Merkel positioning?
We've got a couple of those clips, right?
And also this,
them later.
And also this sense of, I mean, I sort of thought of this idea as like, Merz was almost like reverse filibustering, you know? It's not like filibustering and filling
trying
filling
to find
time.
A word.
It's just like happily sitting there while Philly Donald
silencing.
Trump fills the airspace talking about, you know, as long as he's not attacking me, fine, I can sit here. So I think it was a mixture of these things, but
silence
we should definitely...
Silence was golden.
Silence was golden. And yeah, actually, we did a quick transcription of the whole press...
It's
not a press conference, but a quick transcription of the whole thing. And by a quick count, it looked like Donald Trump spoke more than 6,000 words in that Oval Office encounter, and Friedrich Merz was about 650. So it's almost 10 to 1. And I think that's also a kind of a result for Merz.
Yeah, and I'm interested to hear what Michaela had to say, because, of course, you were part of the German delegation, so you got to talk to Friedrich Merz's people. And what had they been expecting when it comes to the share of speech time that Friedrich Merz was going to get?
There was a lot of debate amongst the press accompanying that official delegation. And funnily enough, 90-10, that kind of split was discussed. So it's interesting to see somebody do the maths on that. And that's something Friedrich Merz was very conscious of. I think we saw that there was a deliberate attempt to make historical references, to make sure that there's a lot of thank you in there. There was plenty of thank you in there. And to be grateful, because after all, the United States did decide the Second World War together with the other allies. Friedrich Merz himself thanked for liberating Germany from the Nazis. And then we even saw Donald Trump crack a joke about Germany arming up too much, that he would then stop them. And he then praised Germany. So this really was off the radar of how well it could have gone. And for us, it was clearly visible that there was a concept behind it. And my sense is that Merz only played out 20% of the references that he clearly had in his pocket with him.
Yeah, and what he also did have in his pocket or on the plane with him was that big gift. Lots of people have been speculating, what was he going to bring? You know, what kind of a present can you give the American president? And we've got the pictures, and maybe we can just look at that. And if you're listening, we'll be describing Friedrich Merz's gift to the US president was a copy of the birth certificate of
Trump's grandfather.
Grandfather, right?
Yeah.
Who's also called Friedrich,
yes,
right? Born in Bad Dürkheim, and Trump actually, I thought the pronunciation was quite good. He said Bad Dürkheim, but maybe we can listen to that.
So to let you know, this is the birth certificate of Donald Trump's grandfather, born in 1869, close to Bad Dürkheim.
Right.
Yeah.
That's called.
And his Christian name was Friedrich.
Right. That's serious German.
Serious,
right?
German name.
That's serious German. Bad Dürkheim is serious German. But I want to thank you very much for, first of all, I want to thank you for that. That's
my
beautiful.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank
it's
you again.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, that, you know, that sort of set the tone straight away, right?
I mean, that was equivalent of, you know, Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister. He went there with, you know, famously, he sort of took a letter from the king out of his pocket and said, oh, look, here's your invitation to a state visit. obviously Germany doesn't have a king, so he couldn't pull the king card, yeah? But he kind of got as close as he could here with this, you know, a reference to Donald Trump's own family history, gold frame. Like with the gold around the, in the, you can see in the back of the Oval Office, that's going to fit. If he puts it up in the Oval Office, that's going to fit nicely. So I think that was, you know, under the heading of kind of appropriate level schmoozing, I think that kind of hit the tone that he wanted to at the beginning.
Yeah, and I think as well, and Michaela, you hinted at that already, there were references to history, and we can listen to one situation where that came up very, very clearly when Friedrich Merz actually mentioned the kind of anniversary that's happening on Friday, so the 6th of June.
We all are looking for measures and for instruments to bring this terrible war to an end. And may I remind you that we are having June 6th tomorrow. This is D-Day anniversary, when the Americans once ended a war in Europe. And I think this is in your hand in specific, in ours.
That was not a pleasant day for you?
No, that was not a pleasant
day.
Well,
not a great
in
day.
The long run, Mr. President, this was the liberation of my country from Nazi dictatorship.
That's true. That's true.
And we know what we owe you. But this is the reason why I'm saying that America is again in a very strong position to do something on this war and ending this war. So,
and by this war, obviously, Friedrich Merz was referring to Russia's war against Ukraine. Michael, I was just wondering what you made of this scene, because, you know, it's interesting, the sort of the psychology behind the conversation between these two men, right? This is clearly a situation where Friedrich Merz contradicts the US president, but unlike the Ukrainian president, it still feels he tries to maintain some sort of a warm atmosphere, right?
Well, first I want to explain that I'm now in the minibus that is catching up with a motorcade of the German Chancellor, because we're already heading back to Berlin. That's why it's a bit bumpy in the background, and that's why it sounds different to our listeners. And I thought in that exchange, it was really interesting that Donald Trump would assume that Friedrich Merz would see the defeat of the Nazis as Germans losing out, as something that he would potentially feel bad about. And in a sense, he gave him a history lesson then. It took German society quite a while to see that as the liberation that it was. So it shows that he had some work to do also in explaining the historic scope of Ukraine beyond the immediate interests of everybody. And I think to us as observers, it showed that talking about historical continuity and the historic role of the United States, that argument is completely lost on Donald Trump. At the same time, it was very tangible that Friedrich Merz was peppering his whole comments with gratitude for the historic interference, or, well, interference is the wrong word, but support from the United States, that U.S. lives were lost. And then he was very fast to come to the point that, once again, the United States would be the one, the world power, making the difference in Ukraine and in pushing back against Russia. And here we got at least some ambiguous language from Donald Trump, who said that a deadline of running out of patience, that was in his head, and that he could then be very tough on either of the two. But then he described both sides, Ukraine and Russia, like two kids arguing.
We've got that soundbite. Before you continue, Michaela,
argue it out for a while.
Yeah, let's listen to the original.
Sometimes you see two young children fighting like crazy. They hate each other and they're fighting in a park. And you try and pull them apart. They don't want to be pulled. Sometimes you're better off letting them fight for a while and then pulling them apart. And I gave that analogy to Putin yesterday. I said, President, maybe you're going to have to keep fighting and suffering a lot because both sides are suffering.
Yeah, two kids fighting. Obviously, this is something where half the country here, at least, really had to hold their breath and thought this is just a completely different kind of view on what's going on. This is very clear here in Germany what is happening. Russia is attacking Ukraine. If you want to compare it to a playground fight, the situation in Ukraine is you've got one big bully that's hitting a very small child on the head constantly for no reason, and the small child is trying to defend itself, right? And this is still not how Donald Trump seems to see it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, I mean, you did see Friedrich Merz at a couple of points trying to emphasize that point that, you know, Ukraine was the wronged party, and that, you know, saying things or pointing out, for instance, that Ukraine is not targeting civilians in Russia as opposed to what Russia is doing in Ukraine. But some of these comments and also what Michaela just referred to there, Donald Trump saying that at some point, if he does feel that it's going nowhere, then he might, you know, impose sanctions, but not just on the Russian side, but also potentially on the Ukrainian side. And of course, we know the kind of impositions that the leverage that the United States has over Ukraine is enormous, because it's not just about, oh, okay, maybe I'll just stop giving you weapons, but it could also be, well, I'm going to stop giving you intelligence, which they did do for a short period earlier on in the administration. So I think these are real worries for the, not just for the Ukrainians, but for the Europeans more broadly, about this, the whole paradigm through which Donald Trump sees this war is not the same. With the Europeans and also the Biden administration beforehand saw this as a kind of a matter of justice, that Ukraine's territorial integrity, its sovereignty had been undermined, that this was against, you know, international law. Donald Trump simply...
And that it would set a dangerous precedent, yeah, right, for other, yeah, countries, yeah, other big bullies, yeah, if you will, but to attack neighbours that are smaller.
Yeah, and the sense that Donald Trump, he just doesn't see it through that lens of right and wrong. He just sees a war, a fight, and who has the cards? You remember what we saw in the showdown with Zelensky? And of course, if that is your paradigm, then you're not going to be so bothered about who's in the right or not. If you just want the war to end so that, for instance, Donald Trump thinks that he can then maybe build a more constructive relationship with Russia that could potentially help him also with vis-a-vis China, then your overall approach can be very different. And obviously, yeah, it's far too early to say, but we don't have any sense yet from this meeting of whether Friedrich Merz is able to shift that overall lens through which Donald Trump sees this war. And we have to be skeptical because, you know, he's had oodles of people trying to do that with him, and it hasn't evidently had any impact so far.
And he's also still saying that the US has given most support to Ukraine, which is also simply not,
yeah,
a fact, right? And Friedrich Merz, interestingly, just didn't contradict, yeah, in that situation. We've got that clip as well, so we can listen to the numbers that Donald Trump throws into the conversation, and Friedrich Merz essentially nods.
We spent $350 billion, much more than Europe, but Europe spent a lot also, and they spent, yeah, way over $100 billion.
Yeah.
So you're talking about close to $500 billion went into that whole thing, and it's not even the money, and I know with you too, it's a lot of money, but it's the death that's being caused.
So, Michaela, why didn't Friedrich Merz say anything there?
Because I think he's looked at all the other videos and decided that alternative facts will be in the room, and that he wouldn't pick a public argument with the president. And I just want to illustrate the context of this meeting today. Just a short while before these two leaders met, Donald Trump was on the phone to Xi Jinping of China, Chinese premier, and there's a lot of domestic stuff going on. And whereas European leaders, including Friedrich Merz, think day and night about how to end this war in Europe, clearly this is not something the US president spends that terribly much of his time with. And also the media, Fox News was carrying this. They were carrying this meeting live. They were billing this as a comment on the phone call with Xi Jinping, the mounting scandal over Elon Musk leaving and being very negative about the president. And there was a lot of domestic stuff, also the electronic pen that Joe Biden used, which Donald Trump sees as a complete scandal. These were the key issues, certainly the MAGA base media were highlighting while this was going on. I think that Friedrich Merz also got a clear perspective on, despite the fact that Germany is the largest economy in Europe, the third largest in the world, he doesn't spend that terribly much time thinking about Europe. And he spends, clearly, certainly his team spends increasing time thinking about Asia and in particular China.
What do you know about the kind of journalists that were in the room in the Oval Office? I saw on X that the MAGA camp apparently had also invited certain journalists that were trying to ask uncomfortable questions because, you know, we've now so far established that this was a fairly schmoozy meeting between the two. And, you know, the journalists in the room were asking sort of questions about Russian sanctions or about US domestic politics, as you just said, about Elon Musk, about Chinese students, etc. Can you tell us about whether there was a risk of this derailing because of journalists that were invited or not?
I mean, there were some there, but clearly they didn't get to ask any very dicey questions. There was no moment where Friedrich Merz was seriously challenged. And most interestingly, J.D. Vance, who at the Munich Security Conference had accused Germany of essentially being not that terribly democratic, that the firewall, which means to some degree isolating the far-right alternative for Germany, the AfD party, which is seen in parts as extremist, he said there's no room for that. We saw none of that in this meeting. He didn't say anything. So there was a sense of a clear intention to make this a pleasant experience for Friedrich Merz.
It is quite interesting that to what extent luck plays in this as well, because, you know, I mean, there will be journalists in there. I mean, there was one German journalist who said that another German journalist who's more in the kind of the MAGA mindset seemed to be trying to ask a question that could relate to
where you heard the word freedom.
Yeah. So could be relating to the debate about the treatment of the AfD and just got kind of drowned out, you know. So it could just be that, you know, that could have made the difference whether one individual question gets drowned out or not. But I think another interesting point towards how this was potentially diffused between Merz and Trump is the Merkel connection, right? Mm. And that Friedrich Merz and Donald Trump, if they have one thing in common, it's actually antipathy to Angela Merkel.
That's true.
And I mean, for Donald Trump, I think Angela Merkel.
So again, we need a word for the opposite of fan club.
Yes. Right? And for Donald Trump, I think Angela Merkel was, you know, the epitome of Germany. I mean, she kind of embodied Germany, of course, because she was in power for so long. I mean, that's natural. But she embodied a couple of things. For instance, this Nord Stream pipeline, the gas pipeline, which came in during her era. And Donald Trump had railed against this while he was president in his first term. And we have a soundbite about that, which maybe we can play in a moment. And also that Angela Merkel, also during the refugee crisis, also opened the borders to a large number of refugees to come in. And this was seen by Donald Trump, but also by this kind of broader MAGA movement as something like a kind of, she's destroying Germany, is something that he'd often said. And you hear this picked up again more recently by J.D. Vance, you know, talking about mass migration as a major issue. And also on that, I mean, should we listen to that soundbite, which is quite interesting, where Donald Trump he's asked by one of the questioners about this latest travel ban, which he had announced. Mm. And this gets him onto the topic of migration. And that kind of leads him in the Trumpian weave into talking about Angela Merkel.
We want to keep bad people out of our country. The Biden administration allowed some horrendous people, and we're getting them out one by one, and we're not stopping until we get them out. We have thousands of murderers. I even hate to say this in front of the chancellor. Of course, you have a little problem too with some of the people that were allowed into your country. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It shouldn't have happened. I told her it shouldn't have happened what she did, but you have your own difficulty with that, and we do, and we're moving them out, and we're moving them out very strongly.
Yeah, and we were talking to our colleague here in the office, and, you know, that joint criticism of Angela Merkel and her policies, and Friedrich Merz essentially cozying up with the US president in that criticism of a previous government here in this country. It's really uncommon. Well, you don't also, do that, right?
And Donald Trump only referring to Angela Merkel as her. You know, she was a ghost in the room.
Yeah, Lady Voldemort.
She was a ghost in the room. Curious what Michaela made of that.
Yes, although Merz wouldn't join in really publicly being disrespectful to Angela Merkel, but there are really two key points. It's the whole migration crisis, the so-called migration crisis, but also Nord Stream 2, that pipeline that directly connected Russia and Germany that was then blown up. And Friedrich Merz was against it very early on. And that is something that Donald Trump clearly remembered, or he was briefed on it. I think that's notable as well, that he knew exactly what Merz's position was, and that he clearly made a note that he was never really on the same page with Angela Merkel.
Yeah. And Friedrich Merz, I think very deliberately last week when Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was in Berlin, said that. Nobody asked him about Nord Stream 2, but he said it in public, knowing that he was going to go to Washington very soon to remind Donald Trump. That's our interpretation, of course. But it was so clear, it came out of nowhere. But he said, it's not going to happen with me as chancellor, by the way, before you ask.
Yeah, but I mean, the irony is that there are some on the in some kind of corners of the right in the United States that are beginning to talk about, well, maybe Nord Stream should be opened as part of any settlement with the Russians. So, you know, all of this could come full circle. But
in terms of energy as well, I thought it was interesting how Donald Trump said, we've got so much oil and gas, so you don't need anybody else. And even if you tried, you couldn't buy it all. You know, all those mega words that are still unfamiliar to us Europeans here, right? That language is still, it still takes some getting used to, right, Michaela?
Yeah, I think that was a very clear hint that Donald Trump expects something in return for what he feels is giving, giving, giving. I think it's interesting that Friedrich Merz has a position that he wants to spend a lot of the money that he now has available, because everybody here knows that with the debt brake having been put on hold for defense spending, he essentially has a blank check to spend on defense goods, but also on the future of European defense. And Donald Trump wants some of that money to be spent in the United States. I think it would be very interesting when more concrete demands come. But this was, I guess, in Trump terms, a pretty subtle hint that Europe, that Germany should be buying more LNG, which it does, of course, already as an alternative to Russian gas.
Yeah, and Friedrich Merz did make this point where he said, okay, you know, we've understood the message. I mean, one of the goals of this meeting was, of course, to keep Donald Trump interested in Europe, to keep him interested in NATO, to keep him engaged in supporting Ukraine. And Friedrich Merz made it very clear to get this message out to Donald Trump in the few words that he had, to say, OK, we've learned our lesson and we are investing in defence. And Donald Trump seems to have heard this call, and that actually led to quite a funny situation where we also should just listen to the original.
I know that you're spending more money on defense now, and quite a bit more money, and that's a positive thing. I'm not sure that General MacArthur would have said it's positive, you know. He wouldn't like it, but I sort of think it's good. You understand what I mean by
that? I understand.
He made a statement, never let Germany rearm. And I said, I always think about that when he says, sir, we're spending more money on defense. I say, oh, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a good thing. But, you know, at least to a certain point. There'll be a point when I'll say, please don't arm anymore if you don't mind. We'll be watching him. I'll get him.
And actually, it sounds funny, but of course there is an agreement underlying this statement as well, that Germany has committed to not have more than a certain amount of soldiers. That is part of the 2+4 treaty, right? That we cannot have an infinite amount of soldiers. We would be in breach of an international treaty or a multinational treaty if we were to say one day, okay, let's have 1 million soldiers. We would not be allowed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the the whole kind of framework under which Germany has really existed since the end of the Second World War was bounded. Yeah, it was bounded in the West by the United States. It was bounded in the East by Russia, by the Soviet Union, by the Warsaw Pact. And yeah, this kind of came from this mistrust towards Germany about what could happen. And of course, it's now a measure of how far Germany has come that the calls are now no longer for holding back in terms of military spending, but on going further. But it's also, I mean, we do almost have to pinch ourselves because, I mean, this is kind of classic Donald Trump humor, but imagine any other American president kind of joking about a subject like that. I mean, it's really unimaginable. And I think it's probably pretty difficult for a German chancellor also to sit there and kind of deal with humor about something that anything that kind of emanates from the Nazi past, you know, humor around that is still pretty a live wire, a risk within Germany. And yeah, I guess for Merz, this is the first, Michele, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time that they'd even met, right? So, I mean, Merz is kind of going straight into this very, you know, intense, high-pressure situation with Donald Trump and then finding himself, you know, in this situation where jokes are being made going back to, you know, Germany's military past. And, I mean, it's one thing we remarked upon, Nina, as well, wasn't it? At the very beginning of the meeting, Merz seemed quite, I mean, he was very sort of smiley and almost to the point of giggly, and maybe this was nerves, but also just trying to ensure that, okay, let's get this into a favourable mood at the beginning. I mean, of course, Michele, you weren't able to be right in the Oval Office, but you were very kind of close to the whole bubble of the whole situation. How did that come across to you?
Well, I just want to stress that there's something very instinctive about Donald Trump. He may lack the historical awareness, but making this reference to General MacArthur, who's this World War hero, the longest boulevard, I think it's the longest, because every road seems to cross MacArthur Boulevard here. Schools are named after him up and down the country. It also, and I don't think it was intentional, points towards Germany's dilemma in Europe, in a sense, that everybody wants Germany to be strong and invest in Europe, but nobody really wants Germany to be dominant. And at the same time, the German Chancellor has come out with a pledge to build the strongest European conventional force. That is something that puts him in a lead position, but that makes Germans, I think, historically uncomfortable and might in the future actually make other European countries uncomfortable as well.
But I think that leads us to...
I found it not just a funny scene, but it was also quite insightful in how Donald Trump can kind of stumble instinctively right into the heart of a contentious matter for someone else.
Yeah, and I think it really highlights the reason why this meeting is hailed as a tremendous success by the German press. I mean, Richard, we were almost shocked to see all the headlines and how all the media were essentially saying, wow, didn't he do well? And this really, to me, is still taking some getting used to celebrate something where you're not being kicked out of the Oval Office, where you're not sort of facing headlines with scandal happening between the American president and your own chancellor, that is considered a huge success. But I mean, this is also, realistically, this is the new reality. And Friedrich Merz has shown, I think, in this meeting that he was well prepared and he did try to avoid a scandal. And that was his goal. And so he achieved that goal. He did have the opportunity to talk to lunch and wasn't kicked out before lunch, like Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was. And it is very likely that Donald Trump will come to the NATO summit and that he will actually now, if he has questions about Europe, possibly call Friedrich Merz as well. He's also shown, and that was also different to the first time that he was in office, that he now understands a little better how Europe works, because during his first term, we all remember how he said to Angela Merkel, can't I just give you a call? Because, you know, if I want to talk to Europe, I need one phone number. And then she would explain to him, no, we're doing certain things through the European Commission. This time around, he said, well, yeah, I know I have to go through Europe, but it's really good that I can talk to you because you're so important. So there are these small nuances And Friedrich Merz, you know, who is a transatlantic person by definition, who spent a lot of time there, he really did prepare for this meeting. But it's still striking, I find, that, you know, this is being celebrated as such a big success.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the court of King Trump, isn't it? And you don't know what mood the king is going to be in on the particular day. And so, yeah, I'm sure certainly there was, as Michelle has talked about, there was a lot of preparation went into this. I mean, but obviously, I mean, you would have to be terribly negligent not to do that. And he'd got the experience of people who've been through that experience in the lion's den. He'd also got a good relationship with Emmanuel Macron, who of the current crop of European leaders is the one who's had the longest experience, of course, with Donald Trump, and has had a sort of a functional relationship with him, pretty much. But I think the Macron example also, to some extent, shows the limits of the function of the relationship, because, you know, has he managed to make Donald Trump into a, you know, a real close friend of France, a real close friend of Europe and so on, bring him on board towards a European view of the Ukraine war and all of that? No, not really. I mean, Trump is Trump, and he will always be. But yeah, I mean, these are just the first steps for Friedrich Merz in finding a way of operating with him. Of course, the majority of their talks, the lunch and everything, as Michelle mentioned, happened after this meeting. But I think, you know, one kind of final thought that you definitely got from the vibe in the room, in that, I mean, it was positive, but Merz was absolutely in a subservient position. There was no, you know, in German you have this expression, Augenhöhe, like sort of on eye level.
Eye,
you know, are you on the same? Not, it's not eye to eye, it's not having the same opinion, but it's like, are you
that's kind true, of yeah. It's
on
not
an
content,
equivalent level with each other?
Same hierarchy.
And I don't know if you, I mean, maybe you disagree, Michelle, but the impression was very much, here's the new boy, come to see the big man. I mean, maybe that's inevitable, your first meeting. And it was before they had the proper talks and everything. But Michelle, how did it come across to you?
Friedrich Merz did invite US President Trump to come to Germany. So I'm very curious to see how the dynamics are when Friedrich Merz is on his home turf and Donald Trump is the guest. But clearly, Friedrich Merz was there trying to avoid any kind of trouble. It means letting factual errors go. And he clearly did not go in there trying to convince Donald Trump of anything he doesn't want to do. I thought that was a very interesting strategy, because Friedrich Merz, when you meet him in other contexts, is very opinionated and he will correct people. So clearly there is an exception here. There's a recognition that Donald Trump is the most powerful political leader in the world and that there is a dependence there. So that is the Friedrich Merz take on realpolitik. And I think we saw that in action. And it more than got him through this meeting. I think he did manage to establish a channel of communication. We all remember Friedrich Merz telling how that phone call came about from Kiev, where leaders Emmanuel Macron were sitting there with Volodymyr Zelensky, Donald Tusk, and Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister. And Merz tells this story saying he told Macron, you call him. It was in the middle of the night. And my sense is that this time Friedrich Merz would be the one dialing that number in the future, for sure.
So it's a good ending.
Well, just one final thought occurs to me for both of you. So, I mean, there was an interesting poll that came out yesterday from ARD, so it's the domestic public broadcaster, so kind of sister network of DW. And it's a regular poll, and they ask about popularity of individual politicians. And Friedrich Merz has always suffered in these popularity ratings. He's never been a popular guy. He's got this kind of this character which comes across as somewhat abrasive. He's seen as sort of a grandee, kind of wealthy, and
he broke a lot of election promises as well. We've discussed those in previous episodes.
We've obviously gone through his character a lot on Berlin Briefing, but he's never really cracked the popularity thing. And what stuck out, one of the interesting things in this poll, was that his popularity took a huge jump.
Plus 14.
So it went from 25% having a positive view of him to 39%. So from 1 in 4 to, you know, 2 in 5. Okay. I mean, so, but that's a sort of a, 50 plus percent jump over the previous level. So evidently, like this, and what has been the focus of his first few weeks in office has really been foreign policy. It's been stuff like this. It's been all over, you know, Ukraine and Israel and, you know, this idea, well, what he said to you, Michele, in his first press conference after winning the election, like, I want to prove that Germany is back in action or something like that. And so it's interesting to see that. And I think, I mean, you were saying at the beginning with Nina that the kind of the whole country has been bracing for this meeting. It's like, yikes, how is this going to go? And if there is a collective sigh of relief, if that will also contribute to boosting his popularity, if people think, okay, at last, here is somebody like Angela Merkel and Trump. There's no way they could make it work. They're chalk and cheese. Olaf Scholz, you just got an impression that would get steamrolled by Trump. I mean, he's just not assertive enough. And here is finally somebody who can maybe make it work, even if he seems rather subservient in that first meeting. What do you guys think?
What I find interesting here is that the still most popular politician is Boris Pistorius, the German defense minister, who only ever has bad news for people. He had to explain to Germans over the past years that their military is in tatters, that they don't have enough of anything, that they need to recruit people, that they don't even have the data anymore of people who used to be army reserves. And because he is such a plain talker and just tells it as it is, that clearly seems to resonate with people. And here you have Friedrich Merz. He's only been in office for less than a month now. His big diplomatic push to turn Ukraine around, setting that ultimatum, was completely deflated by the US president, but he took a risk and he's demonstrating to people how bad things really are. He's also promising more cuts in the budget. He says Germany has a spending issue, and he's, again, a politician who doesn't really have much good news, but he's not telling the public everything will just be fine. And he hasn't delivered on the economy yet either, which is completely flat. So I think we're really seeing a change in the public debate, also in the domestic debate. And I think one signal was that Germany's largest trade union, IG Metall, said they were now no longer trying to push for a four-day week in Germany. Until ahead of the elections, there was a lot of debate on whether people should have the opportunity to work a four-day week and still get full pay and everything. That debate is gone. So clearly we are in a new era, for better or for worse. Friedrich Merz's arrival as Chancellor has changed the public debate in Germany, and now he seems to get some traction in the popularity ratings as well.
And I think, you know, people in Germany seem to appreciate politicians who address problems and not in a complicated way, who just say, we've got to deal with this and we've got to find solutions, and then let me just try out a few things. This is what Boris Pistorius did. Michaela just described it. He has done that and he's still doing that. He says, we've got a problem. I'm trying to fix it. I'm trying unconventional methods. And, you know, if you give me your support, cool. Let us try out a few things that maybe haven't been tried before. And let's not try and think it through to the very last knob of the, you know, the puzzle. That is not even a picture, but whatever, you get the idea. And that is traditional German thinking. Let's think it through and let's think of all the things that could go wrong before we even address things. And this is clearly changing in the German debate. Friedrich Merz is the same. He tries things out. Sometimes, you know, he falls flat on his face, like when he tried to, or when he passed that vote through Bundestag. We talked about that in previous Berlin Briefing episodes with the help of the AfD. That really didn't go down well. But people also forget these things very, very quickly. So that poll that you just mentioned, Richard, also saw another person jump in popularity, and that was Germany's Interior Minister, Alexander Dobrindt. He jumped 13 percentage points, not 14, but 13. And that is quite a significant jump. He's also now very popular for his clear words on the whole migration chaos needs to be solved. And I'm ready to take up a fight with courts. Even there was a court ruling that said, okay, what you did to the case of three Somalians who were pushed back at the German border, that was not okay. And now he says, all right, in that case, maybe, but in general, we do need to get more control back. And of course, this is now a situation that is going to be fought out in courts over the next couple of months. But Alexander Dobrindt says, all right, well, then if people say there's too much chaos, we need to address the chaos. And I'm just also not shying away from tackling these things in court. So, yes, it's the age of people who address problems and who try unconventional things.
And, I mean, this is maybe a natural reaction to after a government that was seen as sclerotic in the public eye, the previous government, which kind of sunk into a morass of its own infighting. But, of course, we're super early days. We're barely a month into this new government. And what we may be seeing with these numbers is simple honeymoon period. Yeah, so obviously early days. But it'll be interesting to see how this meeting with Trump kind of feeds into the overall image of Merz that he is gradually building now for the first time as Chancellor.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to record another episode of Berlin Briefing in a couple of months' time where we think back to, wow, remember when we thought it was all hunky-dory between Friedrich Merz and Donald Trump. You never know. But for now, this meeting was celebrated as a big success. Any last thoughts, Michaela?
Well, I'm sure this was not a free lunch at the White House for Friedrich Merz. So let's wait what the price will be in the end.
Tariffs! Richard.
And also let's keep our eyes open for, you know, does the kind of Vance attack on Germany going back to the Munich Security Conference on this issue of democracy, what we've seen coming from Marco Rubio as well recently, even setting up an office within the State Department looking at this kind of issue within Europe. Does this start to actually fizzle out, or does it stay there and as part of the overall approach to Europe, and that whether this may have been an outlier, this more positive meeting, or whether Europe is going to have to get used to a constant kind of barrage of mixed signals coming across the Atlantic. But I guess one other last thought is that in that clip that we played from Merz talking to Michaela, he said at the beginning that Trump wants an agreement on trade. I think in terms of Trump's impatience with Putin, Trump might start to feel impatient for some kind of result on something. You know, he set so many balls rolling internationally in terms of trade, kind of plastering virtually the entire world with tariffs, on Ukraine, on Iran, so many kind of issues he's intervening in and trying to shake things up and saying, I want a result. But he calls himself a big deal maker. At some point, he's going to want some deals, you know? So, I mean, he's got something fairly small with the UK, but there are questions about what that really is. So Merz may be right. Maybe Trump is going to start getting hungry enough for deals that some deals actually do come. We'll see.
Yeah. And of course, we're very interested in hearing what you out there have to say, and do send us your comments. You can do that on YouTube, of course. If you found us on YouTube, you can also send us comments on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. Do subscribe. That would be nice. Let us know what you think. And of course, spread the news, and do sign up to our newsletter that comes out every Tuesday, where we probably next week will have a deeper analysis as well of this meeting. And for now, we're just letting Michaela go back to Berlin, come back home, and we'll see you next week.